Discerning Hearts provides content dedicated to those on the spiritual journey. To continue production of these podcasts, prayers, and more, go to discerninghearts.com and click the donate link found there or inside the free Discerning Hearts app to make your donation. Thanks, and God bless.
DiscerningHearts.com presents St. Thérèse and Marie, the story of two cousins with Father Timothy Gallagher. Father Gallagher is a member of the Oblates of the Virgin Mary, a religious community dedicated to retreats and spiritual formation, according to the spiritual exercises of St. Ignatius of Loyola. Father Gallagher is featured on several series on the EWTN television network, including Living the Discerning Life. He's the author of numerous books on the teachings of St. Ignatius of Loyola, as well as on the teachings of Venerable Bruno Lanteri, founder of the Oblates of the Virgin Mary. St. Thérèse and Marie, the story of two cousins with Father Timothy Gallagher. I'm your host, Chris McGregor.
The next letter takes us to the next summer. And as we've been saying, the reason for that is that we just don't have letters during the year because they're together and they can visit at the Carmel. The family is at Chateau for the summer and we're in July. Now, this is a letter that Marie writes to Thérèse in late July, and then we'll have Thérèse's response to it. But I want to preface Marie's letter by quoting a paragraph from a letter that Thérèse wrote just a few days earlier to Céline. And in this letter, so this is July 18th, and we're in 1890 now. So Marie's 20, Thérèse is 17 at this point, and we're in the summer. And Céline has written to Thérèse. These are the years, as I said earlier, when Thérèse is with her letters, and I'm sure the visits too, you know, during the year. A great pillar of strength for Céline, who is carrying the weight of their father's illness and the family's situation. So in response to a letter from Céline the day before, Thérèse writes, and as she's concluding the letter, she refers to Marie. And that's why I want to quote this, because Marie will pick up on this in her letter to Thérèse. So Thérèse says, kiss everybody for me and tell them all I would like to say, exclamation point. You'll get everywhere in Thérèse's letters that words just can't express everything my heart feels. I think very much about my dear Léonie, my dear little visitandine. Now, there isn't one of these exquisite touches in Thérèse. So, Léonie is back with the family. It's been 2.5 years since her third attempt to enter religious life has failed. So, the first time that she tries to join, she's already tried with the poor Clares that last 8 days. And then she is very drawn at the example of their aunt, Sister Mary Dorothy, to the Visitation, Francis de Sales' contemplative sisters. And she has made a first attempt, which lasted 6 months, a second attempt, which lasted 2 years, and now she's been home for 2.5 years. And this is probably the lowest point in Léonie's life, because she's getting older, and she's past the age where most women would be married or have entered religious life. She has failed 3 times to enter religious life, which is the ardent desire of her heart. And she very much still wants to be a visitation sister. And so Thérèse, knowing that, when she asks Céline to give her greetings to Léonie, I think very much of my dear Léonie, and look what she calls her, my dear little visitandine. In other words, in your heart, you are a visitation sister, and I know it, and I want you to know that I know it. After Thérèse's death, a lot of grace was poured out on a lot of family members. Léonie always felt that her final attempt, which followed Thérèse's death, to enter the visitation sisters, which was successful. So she spent 41 years there, and I think I quoted elsewhere in one of our conversations about her how she says that in a letter that when she enters that final time, I will only leave here in my coffin, which in point of fact is what happens. And these are the years when she becomes the person whose cause of canonization is now underway. But Thérèse, with this exquisite delicacy and sensitivity that she has, says in just one quick sentence the thing that would most bring joy to Leonie's heart. You are a visitation sister. You're a religious just like the rest of us. That's who you are. That's your identity. That's what you love. And I just want to say that to you. And then Therese turns to Marie. Tell Marie of the Blessed Sacrament. So this is the name that she gives to Marie. In fact, with a slight change, it will be her name, as we've said, in religious life. She'll be Marie of the Holy Eucharist. But Therese is already calling her by this name. Tell Marie of the Blessed Sacrament that Jesus asks much love from her. He wants from her reparation for the coldness he receives, and her heart must be a furnace in which Jesus may warm himself. She must forget herself entirely in order to think only of him. She must forget herself entirely, all these worries and preoccupation with yourself and how you're doing, and did I and should I have and much ought I to, and just let all of that go. She must forget herself entirely in order to think only of him. In a way, in a single sentence, that's the heart of the little way as well. I'm too weak. I want to be holy. I know that I can't do it. But I know that you and you alone can do it, Jesus, and that you want to do it. And so I give myself entirely to you. She must forget herself entirely in order to think only of him. All right, now it's just a few days later, on July 23rd, that Marie writes to Therese. My dear little Therese, I was very much touched by Pauline's tenderness in my regard. Thank her for me, I beg you. What happens here is that in the letter to Celine that we just quoted, Pauline adds a postscript, and she adds a little poem. We don't have the text of the poem, and so we don't know, was it written by Pauline herself, who also wrote poetry? If it were from Therese, I'm sure it would have been saved. Knowing Marie's struggles and her worries and her doubts and burdens, Pauline knows that this poem is going to speak to her. So she adds this into Therese's letter to Celine. And now that Marie is responding to Therese, she wants to thank Pauline for doing that. I was very much touched by Pauline's tenderness in my regard. Thank her for me, I beg you. How can I tell you how happy I was to receive this little poem that corresponds so well with my sentiments? I read it and read it again continually. In a word, I am relishing it. And then she turns to Therese and those few sentences that Therese wrote in greeting to her in that same letter. And you, my darling Therese, do you imagine that your few lines did not do good to my soul? They supplied me with spiritual nourishment today. Well, Jean's fiancé, so in these summers, François Lanel, whom Jean would marry, also joins the family for the summer vacation. So he's there, and he brings all of his energy and his world and so forth into the chateau. They supplied me with spiritual nourishment today. While Jean's fiancé is here, the means of union with God are difficult to carry out because with François, all kinds of activity, and they would do various things. There's one thing that's kind of charming, and the photos are there on the archives of the Carmel of Lisieux, so anybody can find them. One of the many things they do is they organize, they call it an eccentric trip to the Andes Mountains. So in their imagination, they are journeying to these mountains in South America, and they have the camera along, and they're taking photos, and it's François, and then Marie is there, Celine is there, and then also the son of the doctor who would be the one who would care for Therese in her final illness, who was a priest, and he was a friend of the family, and he was visiting. So the five of these set out, and they have the camera with them, and they take pictures at various points. You see them climbing up a rocky landscape or setting up a tent and so forth. So these kinds of activities, which were fun, and many others that you can think of like that, all of this comes in with François and all of his energy. And so what Marie is saying is with all of this, it's harder to have the quiet time for prayer that she loves so much. While Jean's fiancée is here, the means of union with God are difficult to carry out, so meditation is often set aside. Conversations with this poor human being cannot take its place for me. As wonderful as all the activity and everything and being together is, none of that can replace the quiet time to be alone with Jesus. So that's why I say, you know, you pull back from these letters. Does Marie struggle? Certainly she does. But the heart of Marie is just deep goodness and a life of faith. And what matters at the center of everything for her is Jesus, the Eucharist, prayer. And there's a great goodness there. How can I tell you, dear little sister, okay, now we're going to get into the struggles, all the temptations that I am experiencing since I am here. I am pursued by bad thoughts. Every moment is a struggle. And so I experience no joy in my communions, and my thanksgivings after communion are cold. I don't feel any love for God. So again, we've heard her say this already to Therese. Meditation, however, is a moment of delight for me. I could spend my days in this exercise. We can just think of what means that a young woman of 20 could say this, you know. Meditation, however, is a moment of delight for me. I could spend my days in this exercise. But instead of encouraging her, that's one more sign of the fact that her life doesn't correspond to all that, and therefore, what value does all of that have? This is only one more proof that I am not advancing in virtue. For prayer without mortification, so prayer without actually living it out, you know, in the day, making those sacrifices, spending oneself, and so forth. For prayer without mortification is like a body without a soul. I love to breathe in an air that is purer than the air of this earth. But as for drawing any fruit from this, there is nothing. It is true, nevertheless, that in my meditations I feel I am burning with love. Again, as we read this, what's Therese going to say to all of this? What's she going to say to all of us when we feel like, yeah, maybe I have some nice times in prayer, but my life certainly doesn't live up to it? Okay, it is true, nevertheless, that in my meditations I feel I am burning with love, but once I return to the combat, so the struggles of the day, fortitude abandons me, and there can be no fruit without work. Of what value is that prayer if I'm not putting it into practice? Very often I ask myself this question: what do I have to offer to God today? Okay, here's one of us at the end of the day, and you look back over it and say, Lord, what did I do for you today? Did I do anything for you today? Did I do anything of value for you today? And you know, you think of this, here is Marie at 20. She's already an adult in the culture of the day. Her sister is about to get married. All of the Martin sisters are either in religious life or have expressed their desire. And here she is. What have I done with my life? What have I accomplished? Very often, I ask myself this question: what do I have to offer to God today? Always nothing, or next to nothing. A few times, some little efforts. And how many of us would feel like we have to respond that way? Dear Therese, you who have so much fervor in God's service. Now, you know, we know Therese enough to know that she's not going to let that go. You know, I'm so weak, but you're so fervent. And we'll watch Therese reply to that. Dear Therese, you who have so much fervor in God's service, teach your little sister to walk in it with courage. I am hardly born into the spiritual life. What have I done for the last 20 years? And she's not quite sure how to answer that. She's 20 years old at this point. I have allowed myself to live just as worldly people live, because the Guérin family was different from the Martin family. Once they moved to Lisieux and they lived in Les Buissonnets, the home was isolated from the city, and they didn't reach out beyond the family very much. Family, their own, and the Guérin family, the Modelons, was really the world of the Martin family. But the Guérins, it was different. They were right in Lisieux, and they were more engaged in things, and so there were social activities, and there were parties in this. And then, of course, when they get the chateau in the summer, you know, all of this goes on. And Marie's, what she's saying here is, I've just allowed myself to follow that kind of worldly life, you know, all the enjoyments and the pleasures and so on. And God has been forgotten. Now I have a great desire to love him, but this desire has to bear fruit. I learned to make my first steps at Carmel. So probably what she means is through the visits to the speak room in conversation with the Martin sisters who are there, she's kind of gotten a guidance or a path in her spiritual life. I learned to make my first steps at Carmel, and will it be there that I'll make my last? How I'd like it to be so. She's being drawn very much to that vocation. We are in July 1890, and it's in September, just a few months later, that Thérèse will take the veil, and that will be the moment when, as we've said, Marie receives clarity about her vocation that she'll never doubt. How can you expect God to call to himself a child who is not seeking to procure his glory? If I had more willpower, would not this single thought give me more fervor in overcoming myself? If I really had a stronger will, the desire to give God glory would get me through all of my weakness, failures, and the worldliness I see in myself and the rest. Again, this is why I say Marie is everyone. She's all of us, and she's turning to Thérèse for guidance, and she'll receive it, as we will. Must I be then, well, it's a question of how we want to, this is translated here. I must be then tepid and cowardly soul. That's a little awkward what she's saying. Am I constrained to be? Must I be? Have I no choice other than to be a tepid and cowardly soul? The way I see myself, is that my lot? That's the question she's asking. If you only knew the sorrow this thought gives me, because I feel that I am this very weak soul. So with great reverence, she's speaking for all of us right there. With our different nuances, but she's speaking for all of us. Yeah, I'm tepid. I'm cowardly. I don't match up to the challenge. I'm more worldly than I should be. Am I condemned to be that? Is that all I can ever hope to be? And how much sorrow that gives me to think of that. Again, how is Thérèse going to respond to this? This is the third time I've begun my letter on three different days. Today, in one of my walks, so this letter is getting kind of long. As we'll see, this is where Celine is starting to look over at her and say, it's getting kind of long here, you know, for Thérèse. And then some nice things about the Chateau Lamuse. I came across an anthill. And so yeah, she's out walking on the grounds. She comes across an anthill and she stops just watching the ants busily doing their work. I came across an anthill and these little beasts gave me much to think about, furnishing me with a model. I saw their coming and going with much fervor in their work, and I made this reflection. What is the goal and reward of their efforts? They have none. And I, who have a divine master to love and serve, I remain inactive. So there is a spiritual message there, but you can see it's all pointing out to me how deficient I am. Look at these little creatures. It's not a question of eternal salvation for them. And look at how busily and diligently they work. And then look at me in my spiritual life. The lesson from the ants was beneficial for me. I spent a blessed day. So this evening, I am happy. It's nice to hear her say that. Tell dear mother, so that's the prioress, Mother Marie de Gonzague, tell dear mother that I have a little cell all to myself and that I feel much at home there. First, I have a splendid view, and this does not harm the soul's ascensions. So somewhere in the chateau, she has found an isolated room, which she has made into her place where she can be alone in solitude and meditate and pray. And most likely what she means is from a window in that room, she gets a very beautiful landscape in front of her, which helps her to raise her heart to God. First, I have a splendid view, and this does not harm the soul's ascensions. And then I love solitude so much. Is it not there, more than anywhere else, that union of the soul with God becomes more intimate? Unfortunately, I am somewhat deprived in this matter, for I am not permitted to retire into my little room as much as I would like, a half hour at the most in the evening, and that is all. So the days are filled with much activity. Getting toward the end of the letter now. Dear Thérèse, the four pages are filled, and this distresses me. If I were to listen to myself, I would talk with you indefinitely, but I have to fear Celine's wrath. Now, in that, Celine is, she's a strong personality, and you don't easily disregard her. And Celine knows that this letter is getting endless and just going on and on and on. And in all likelihood, as I've said, she just doesn't want Thérèse to be overburdened. And she knows the worryings and the troubles that DeMarie is probably expressing. She is already not pleased that I have taken up so much space. My darling's green eyes, and the editors tell us that Celine's eyes were sea green. My darling's green eyes are terrible to take in the evening. When Celine is displeased, you pay attention. Adieu, dear little sister. Kiss dear mother, the prioress, for me, and tell her how much I love her. My heart feels it, but it cannot express it. I kiss you with my whole heart. We received the photographs, and Mama's has to be done over again. So they had photographs taken of Celine, Marie's mother, and they just didn't come out well enough, so they're going to have to be done over again. As I mentioned earlier, not only Celine, but also Marie was able to take the photos. I beg you to tell Pauline this, and then look how she concludes, your little sister, Marie of the Blessed Sacrament, which is a reference to the title that Thérèse gave her in the earlier letter.
We'll return to St. Thérèse and Marie, the story of two cousins, with Father Timothy Gallagher in just a moment. Did you know that Discerning Hearts has a free app where you can find all your favorite Discerning Hearts programming? Father Timothy Gallagher, Dr. Anthony Lillis, Monsignor John Essef, Deacon James Keating, Father Donald Haggerty, Mike Aquilina, Dr. Matthew Bunsen, and so many more. They're all available on the free Discerning Hearts app. Over 3,000 spiritual formation programs and prayers, all available to you with no hidden fees or subscriptions. Did you also know that you can listen to Discerning Hearts programming wherever you download your favorite podcasts, like Apple Podcasts, Google Play, iHeartRadio, Spotify, even on Audible, as well as numerous other worldwide podcast streaming platforms? And did you know that Discerning Hearts also has a YouTube channel? Be sure to check out all these different places where you can find Discerning Hearts Catholic podcasts dedicated to those on the spiritual journey.
Discerning Hearts provides content dedicated to those on the spiritual journey. To continue production of these videos, prayers, and more, go to discerninghearts.com and click the donate link found there or inside the free Discerning Hearts app to make your donation. Thanks, and God bless.
We now return to St. Thérèse and Marie, the story of two cousins, with Father Timothy Gallagher. Father Gallagher, you mentioned the pictures that were taken of the family climbing a hill or an area and pretending that it's the Andes and things like that, and the family pictures that Celine would take. I mentioned this earlier in our conversations, but when you see Marie in those pictures, she's kind of the one who is a little bit more funny than the others. You wouldn't know on the outside what she was struggling with on the inside, that what was coming out in those letters, that's happening in the same person who is in those images. Something important for all of us to kind of remember that outer appearance, you can do that for the world, but I'll use the term veil, it veils what's happening on the interior life of someone.
Yeah, I'd say that's true. And I think very often it's appropriate to do that. You know, we don't want to be going through the day burdening people with gloom, you know, that they can obviously see in us. So I'd say there's a virtue in doing that. It's like Thérèse in her last illness. We'll see Marie, right? That you would pay like you pay admission to a concert to be with her, because you laugh so much when you're with her. And this is when she's dying of this terribly painful illness. Yes, Marie also does have this quality. She loved fun. For example, after Celine leaves and she enters the Carmel, there's a great sadness in the Guérin family home because there's a great void. You know, her presence brought so much there. There's a letter in which Marie describes her efforts to cheer up her father especially. And she's able to get him laughing, and she's doing imitations and funny things and gets him laughing. She had that quality. When she came into the Carmel, she brought that fun with her. The things that would take us too far afield, but there are some just funny things. At one point, the sisters are in the Carmel, and within the cloistered area, it's a kind of a pool, I guess you'd call it, maybe about a foot deep. And I'm going to have to guess, I don't remember exactly, but let's say 30 feet across or something like that. And one day it's in the good weather, so their recreation time, they're sitting outdoors, all of the nuns together. And one of the sisters gets the idea of putting a tub into the water and using a stick as a paddle. And other sisters join this, and Marie gets involved in this, and they start having races. And eventually Celine gets into this, and Marie indicates that Celine wound up, once she got the hang of it, she's winning the races and so forth. And then there's another time when they need to get into a room, and this is another time when they're in recreation outdoors, and they need to get into a room which is on the second floor, and normally it's a long way around through the cloister to get there. And one of the sisters gets a ladder, and they go up in, and they're having fun sort of breaking into the room, and everybody's getting engaged. So Marie very much had that quality. There was a lot of fun in her, and she loved fun, and she could share that with others in beautiful ways. She could also take it to excess, you know, as we've said, and Therese would have to moderate her a bit so that it wouldn't become silly, you know, in some ways. So that's also part of her growth. But yes, that quality is very much there. I think I said earlier, but I'd warmly encourage anybody following these conversations to go online and just spend some time looking at photos of Marie. Because looking at those and spending a little time with them is a wonderful window into Marie. I don't think anybody can look at those photos as a young girl, as she's into mature age and then in the Carmel, without liking her. You just can't, she won you over just with who she is visually, and that quality was part of her. So we're seeing the struggles, and they're very real, and they really burdened her. But that's one facet of the richness of who she is.
Again, to make her so relatable to so many of us, we've discussed this or alluded to this as well in our previous conversations. Bear in mind that the Martins, the heads of the household, had at one point desired to enter religious life. And Louis was very much a man of prayer. Zélie was involved with the Poor Clares of their community in Alençon. Their whole family structure was a bit different than, say, what Marie was growing up. You know, a dad that was probably very much absorbed in his business and didn't necessarily exude the same type of spiritual nature as a Louis, but maybe more like dads that are in homes today. And Celine Gruen, her mother, was charming, very approachable, very much loved, but she wasn't a Zélie Martin. She was probably very much like a lot of mothers that you would see in the home today. So Marie is growing up in a way that many young men and young women are growing up, how we grew up in that type of family structure. So her struggles with trying to find time to be alone for prayer and having that source of encouragement, that where the Martin girls had a different experience, the Gruens were very much more the common person. But bearing that in mind, just thinking of those who are out there now, maybe who can identify with that, and it makes it even more relatable.
Yeah, the Guérin family, as we said earlier, their spiritual journey is really motivated or gains energy from their contact with Louis and Zélie and what they saw there. And Isidore will be maturing in his faith throughout his life. Isidore is a very strong personality, just humanly speaking. He's a fighter, strong, and he will need to become more gentle as time goes by, and you'll watch that happen. Celine, his wife Celine, was always one who practiced her faith, but she also grows over the years of her life, and as we see, Marie does well. So Marie is raised in a family that is deeply Catholic, you know, at which faith is so important. But I would say it's the Martin family that nourishes the Guérin family on that level. And the most striking example of that is what we're seeing right now, and that is Therese and Marie. So what that says is we're all someplace along the journey, and growth lies ahead. And, you know, it's possible for all of us. I'd say that's the witness of the Garin family in a very special way. 2 days later, Thérèse replies to Marie. My dear little Marie, now watch how she starts. Thank God for all the graces he is giving you. And don't be so ungrateful, she underlines, as not to acknowledge them. So Thérèse doesn't start with, yes, you have these woes and you have these struggles. It's not where her heart goes in the first place. Again, but we've already seen it before, but we see it again here. The first thing is, God has loved you so much and given you so much, and his grace is at work in you. Thank God for all of that. And don't miss it. Don't fail to see that and to acknowledge that before the Lord. What's easily coming to mind here is Ignatius' daily examen. That's where it starts. You don't start with failings. You start with seeing the ways that God has loved you in life. And I'd say that's pretty good spiritual pedagogy in any case. Because in any case, in any spiritual life, no matter how much we may have failed, the primary thing is never our failures. It's the infinite love with which God has loved us and does love us, because as John says, God is love. That's always the first thing. So it's just lovely again with a very sure spiritual intuition that Thérèse begins there, as she begins with encouraging. And it's not empty encouragement. You know, as we've seen, there is so much good in Marie. And then she uses a comparison. You give me the impression of a little country girl to whom a powerful king should come and ask her to marry him. And she would not dare to accept under the pretext that she is not rich enough and schooled enough in the ways of the court, without realizing that her royal fiancé is aware of her poverty and weakness much better than she herself is. Marie, if you are nothing, you must not forget that Jesus is all. Then the next sentence, so you must lose your little nothingness in his infinite all and think only of this uniquely lovable all. And that's the deep answer to Marie's struggles. And Thérèse, I think, would want to say that to every one of us. The comparison, you know, you're just a little poor country girl, and here is a rich and powerful king who wants you to marry him. But you say, but I'm too poor, I'm too ignorant, I fail in this, I'm too weak in that. How can I say yes to that? And you never even realize, she says, that he knows all that a lot better than you do. If you are nothing, Marie, if you are nothing, you must not forget that Jesus is all. This is really the deep heart, I'd say, of everything in Thérèse's spirituality. There's much more to say than that. But the heart of it is, yes, you are weak. Of course you are weak. You're right when you see your weakness. Maybe in Marie's case, it's exaggerated and so forth. But are we up to the ideal that we'd like to live? Of course we're not, because we're weak and we fail. And that doesn't matter. What matters is to open your heart to the one who is everything, who is strong, who not only can lift you out of that weakness, but wants to lift you out of that weakness. If only, this is Thérèse's word, you'll abandon yourself. That is, you'll surrender yourself to him. That's the heart of Thérèse's own personal spirituality. Remember how she talks about the saints who are the mountains? You know, all the great saints, and I'm just a little grain of sand down in the valley. I can't possibly aspire to the mountains. And we all know that. That we can't. We can all say that of ourselves in truth. And then we have the choice of either unhappily settling for less, or we can do what Thérèse does. I needed to find an elevator, you know, that would take me up where I couldn't get on my own. And Jesus, you are that elevator. In your arms, you will raise me up, which is a metaphor for the power of God's grace in us. We can't do it, but God's grace can do it. For Thérèse, her weakness, these aren't just words. I mean, this is at the heart of everything. I'm weak, but it doesn't weigh on me because you're strong. You're everything. And all I have to do is what I can to give my life and my heart and my love completely to you with great confidence that you're my elevator, that you will raise me up. And that's what she's trying to say. It's still a few years before Thérèse will formulate all this more fully, but it's all here. The themes of the overture keep appearing more and more clearly. And that's what Thérèse is saying to Marie. All your troubles and your worries and self-concern and doubt and so forth, just let all that go. Of course you're weak, but your royal spouse, he's infinitely strong. So you must lose your little nothingness in his infinite all, and she underlines infinite and all is capitalized, and think only of this uniquely lovable all. So turn your heart away from your own struggles and self-involvement and burden, and turn your heart toward Jesus. Neither ought you desire to see the fruit gathered from your efforts. If you remember, that's what Marie says, I don't see any fruit from my efforts. These are really profound things that Thérèse is saying so simply here as she's writing the letter. Neither ought you desire to see the fruit gathered from your efforts. So you've been a priest, a religious, a husband, a wife for 10 years, for 20 years, 30 years, and you say, I don't know if there's any fruit from this. And Thérèse says, don't be looking to see fruit from this, that you see it, you know. Neither ought you desire to see the fruit gathered from your efforts. For Jesus is pleased to keep for himself alone these little nothings that console him. So those efforts that you've made in the course of the day, and you're not even sure, so you tried to help this person, but it wasn't even received, or you went out of your way to be present to that, whatever the situation is, and you just don't see any change or anything, any fruit from it. Jesus is pleased to keep for himself alone these little nothings that console him. And now this is her response to Marie saying, well, you're so fervent, though. You are mistaken, my darling, if you believe that your little Thérèse walks always with fervor on the road of virtue. She is weak and very weak, and every day she has a new experience of this weakness. Okay, what's the response? But Marie, Jesus is pleased to teach her, as he did St. Paul, the science of rejoicing in her infirmities. Again, you never read very far in Thérèse without scripture coming, and that just gets more and more as she gets deeper and deeper into scripture with the years. And it's precisely that verse of St. Paul that she quotes, you know, that if I boast, I'll boast in my weakness, because it is weak when that's when I'm strong. When I am weak, then the strength of God is in me. And you can see her really learning this lesson and absorbing and assimilating and living it. This is a great grace, the science of rejoicing in her infirmities. You know, I want to stop here because the thought's just coming to me. I don't want to just say these things too easily. You know, if I can just share something personal at this point, I'd say I'm still very much on that road to really believing that my weakness and imperfections and infirmities are not only not a burden, but if I'm willing to open them to the Lord rather than just get discouraged by them, that can become the very place in which God's grace can become strong in me. I would suspect that we're probably all somewhere on that journey. It's a blessed journey to be on. You can't get close to Thérèse like this and then say, well, I have to settle for less, unhappily, or with certain discouragement. That's the one thing you can't do. And when Thérèse is seeing this in Marie at this point, you just see her coming, no, 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 no. And the wealth and the richness of her response. This is a great grace, and I beg Jesus to teach it to you. For peace and quiet of heart are to be found there only, opening our weakness to Jesus. When we see ourselves as so miserable, when we no longer wish to consider ourselves, and we look only on the unique beloved, that's the answer. Dear little Marie, as for myself, I know no other means of reaching perfection but love. Love, how well our heart is made for that. And Thérèse is so right when you think about that. What is our heart made for most deeply? Remember how St. John Paul II said so often that the vocation of the human person is love. That's the deep vocation. And it doesn't take much reflection to see that I may achieve this in my field or accomplish that task or have this experience, whatever it might be. But the deep thing that our hearts most deeply want is to know that we're loved and to love. And this, again, probably more than anything else, is the core in Thérèse. And later on, she'll describe this a few years later when she's writing its manuscript B in the Story of the Soul, when she'll describe just that beautiful treatise on love. But it's already here. Love, how well our heart is made for that. Sometimes I seek for another word to express love, but on this earth of exile, words are powerless to express all the soul's vibrations. So we have to keep to this one word, love. All right, we're made for love. How do we proceed? Where do we find it? But upon whom will our poor heart hungry for love bestow it? Ah, who will be big enough for this to receive the love of our heart? Will a human person be able to understand it? And above all, will he know how to return it? Marie, there is only one being who can understand the profundity of this word, love. It is only our Jesus who knows how to return infinitely more than we give him. And when I read that, I kind of stopped and I said, what if our world knew that? And this is true of every vocation. It's not just the religious life with its vow of chastity, priesthood with its vow of celibacy. It's true of every married man and woman, of every single person, that our heart is made for love. And in different ways in the different vocations, finally, there is only one person who can fully receive all the love we want to give and fully respond to it, giving even more than we could possibly ever give, giving more in return. And when that love is at the center of our heart, then every other love assumes its richness and its place. You know, husband and wife, parents and children, friends, fellow members in a community of religious life, priests in a diocese, or whatever the relationship might be. But that's the profound truth that Thérèse realizes. Her heart so ardently loves and wants to love and doesn't know, where do I turn? You know, where can I pour out all this love and find its response? And it's only in God. Only in the Lord Jesus do we find that. And then when that is, that's the first commandment, and when that's at the center, then every other love is blessed. And we're going to see her say this. When her childhood friends, Céline Modelone, married, Thérèse wrote her a lovely letter about this. It's just a month or so after Céline's marriage. And she says this: Céline and her husband had a lovely and long-lasting marriage. But Thérèse will say this to her, you know, in our different vocations, when this love is at the heart, then even married love finds its place. And what is beautiful is that it will never end. It's for eternity. You know, but all of that is very deep in Thérèse. And how much more to Marie, who is on the threshold of her Carmelite vocation or coming to clarity about that. But it's absolutely true in every vocation. You know, solus Deus sufficit, God alone is enough. Marie of the Blessed Sacrament, with exclamation point, your name speaks your mission. Console Jesus, make him loved by souls. There's an interesting thing, malade in the French. Céline, who later edits things here, she adds, Jesus is sick with love. Jesus is sick with love. What Thérèse means here, Jesus is hungry and thirsting for the love of human hearts. And so much so, it may be, but we don't know if Thérèse had already gotten this deeply into John of the Cross at this point. She flips around what John of the Cross does in his spiritual canticle, my soul was sick with love and goes off in search of the beloved. And here in Thérèse's rendering, it's Jesus who is sick with love. He so deeply hungers and thirsts for our love. Jesus is sick with love, and we must state that the sickness of love is healed only through love. Marie, really give your whole heart to Jesus. He is thirsty for it. He is hungry for it. Your heart, that is what he longs for. Now, I'd ask everybody listening to let Thérèse say that to you right now. Put your name in place of Marie's name. Really give your whole heart to Jesus. He is thirsty for it. He so much wants your love. He is hungry for it. your heart, what you are at the deepest center of who you are, and all the loves that are there, your heart, that is what he longs for. And then Thérèse goes on, and this refers to something that Céline has said in her earlier letter just a few days before. Your heart, that is what he longs for, even to the point that to have it for himself, he consents to lodge under a dirty and hidden nook. Now, what's behind this is what Céline has written to Thérèse just 5 or 6 days earlier. And I'll quote a paragraph from that letter of Céline to Thérèse. So they're at La Muse and they're traveling around the area just visiting. The other day, we went by chance into a poor little church. I believed that my tears were going to betray my heart. I had all the trouble in the world holding them back. Just think, a tabernacle without a veil, a real black hole, perhaps the refuge of spiders, a ciborium so poor that I think it was copper, and what did it have for a cover? A dirty rag, no longer retaining the form of a ciborium veil. In the ciborium is where the consecrated hosts are kept. In the ciborium, a single host, so just one host in the ciborium. Alas, there is no need of others in this parish, for there is not a single communion throughout the year outside of Easter. Then, in these country places, there are unrefined priests who close their churches all day long. Besides, they are old and without financial support. And just as a note, Céline later comments on this, that they made plans to get a suitable ciborium for the parish, and they had the Carmel make a veil for the ciborium. But Thérèse, this is what Thérèse has in mind when she's writing these lines to Marie. Your heart, that is what he longs for, even to the point that to have it for himself, he consents to lodge under a dirty and hidden nook. So he is so intensely longs for the love of your heart that he is willing to be there in the Blessed Sacrament, even in the most abandoned circumstances, in the greatest poverty. And as Céline notes there, you know, these were poor country parishes. They probably didn't have many resources. So that's what Thérèse is saying to Marie. That's the intensity and the degree and the lengths that Jesus will go in order to be there so that he can receive all the love of your heart in the Eucharist in this case. How not love a friend who reduces himself to such extreme indigence? And how does one dare speak of one's poverty? How does one dare speak of one's poverty when Jesus makes himself like his fiancée? And again, Scripture, he was rich and he made himself poor. So that's 2 Corinthians 8, verse 9. He was rich and he made himself poor in order to unite his poverty to the poverty of Marie of the Blessed Sacrament. What a mystery of love. So, Marie of the Blessed Sacrament, you're so conscious of the poverty of your heart and the way you live your response to Jesus. But he's the one who from richness made himself poor, even to dwelling in the Blessed Sacrament in such poor and impoverished, negligent circumstances, you know, as were described to her recently. What a mystery of love. All my love to the dear colony, or this is a conclusion, that is the Guérin family and guests at La Muse. My heart is always with Marie of the Blessed Sacrament. The tabernacle is the house of love where our two souls are enclosed. That's again a lovely thought. Both of us praying before the tabernacle, we're deeply united. We're one as we do that. Your little sister who begs you not to forget her in your prayers. And then she signs Sister Thérèse, etc.
You've been listening to St. Thérèse and Marie, the story of two cousins, with Father Timothy Gallagher. Be sure to check out the comprehensive summary and reflection questions contained in the show notes for this episode. To download this particular episode, along with hundreds of other spiritual formation programs, visit discerninghearts.com, or you can find them within the free Discerning Hearts app or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. This has been a production of Discerning Hearts. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. We hope that if this has been helpful for you, that you will first pray for our mission which is to offer authentic and rock-solid spiritual formation freely to souls around the world. And if you feel us worthy, please consider a charitable donation, which is fully tax-deductible, to help support our efforts. But most of all, we hope that you will tell a friend about discerninghearts.com and join us next time for St. Thérèse and Marie, the story of two cousins, with Father Timothy Gallagher.